I imagine will be a lot of learnings coming from this. I think 2020 will be a year that's remembered a very long time.
I sign Sue. I laugh, right? You know, like, I don't mean to be too philosophical, but I think... Hegel often be misquoted, you know, but the history thing. But I think there's something about we certainly, you know, history does repeat itself in a different way. We're certainly not very good at learning the lesson. The issue is, like, SARS was a very cheap lesson, and there have been, actually, I've looked back, there's been, you know, some workshop and so on, but it died very quickly. And I've got a keen interest in medical education. Even back to 2017, there's a lovely article to show in one of the mainstream medical education journals to show medical students are very ill prepared to wear PPE, you know, and I like not just wear, but the whole process of donning and doffing. But, you know, that's something that we can talk about. So it shows you that we are very forgetful being, and that doesn't take much for us to say we learn the lesson and move on. But I think especially now we understand, you know, I don't want to move this too much to geopolitics, but China certainly played this very strongly in the situation of dealing with this and forgetting about it, meaning that because there were no lesson learned in SARS with the wet market, because SARS is very interesting because these viruses jump between species, and SARS was something come from bat as the reservoir. And that's what I don't like about the social media. There are a lot of missed information and fake news, and it was nothing to do with eating bats. What has actually become much more of a problem is when they jump species, and SARS jumped from bats as a reservoir to civet, which is a delicacy in certain part of China, and that was the spread. And now with this COVID, again, the bats reservoir jump from pangolin. I think they've got quite good data and the research model in the labs in Hong Kong and various other places, at least calling it the number one culprit for the species jump, the pangolin. Again, is another delicacy. And this wet market control has been very, very lax, despite, you know, the lesson in SARS. And the first thing you raise now in any media, you get... you know, this army of Chinese bloggers or people supporting, you know, the communist government will say, well, there are worse wet market in Southeast Asia, there are worse eating habit in certain parts of the world. Why are you just pointing at us? But I'm afraid this is a second time. If you're still taking that attitude, it means you're not learning it.
So the dilemma of cruise ships will be another big learning, I feel, because it almost looks like cruise ships have become just one big incubator.
Yeah, I think you highlighted very well. It doesn't take much imagination. We're doing a human test, you know, incubating, you know, the virus in this close confined environment. Well, maybe the future is a very expensive cruise travel. All the rooms have negative pressure. And all of them make very strict hygiene, you know, code and so on, you know, in terms of even the passengers. That might be something that they can come up with. But I guess, you know, it go back to, you know, the response, you know, from WHO and so on. And again, you know, it's very interesting. I would make this as the last point. You know, before we move on to anything else, I want to talk about maybe PPE or other our actual management in hospital. The warnings are all there, and it's interesting. Taiwan, because of political issues, been silent, and their email is very interesting. They sent out email end December through their, whether it's their kind of networks or ability to receive information, they certainly quoted that there were, like, in end December, there were already 8 cases of this, all in isolation, SARS-like, you know, which has been, the quota has been refuted by the Chinese authority. Can you give us information? And all these papers in isolation. And WHO basically, the reply is just noted, but done nothing. And what they have done since then, actually, in that weeks leading up to end January, before China have to lock down, is to deny and saying they're controlling it, they're cleaning the market and so on. And And while, you know, again, it's all public knowledge, and the poor ophthalmologist who died in China, who gone on social media tell their friends there's a new SARS going on in Wuhan, and the medicals will know, for goodness sake, this is an ophthalmologist, you know, he would be so knowledgeable and so in touch with these kind of pneumonia, there's something very bad going on in that hospital. And the poor guy died now, and it is quite scary that all of them end up just getting their knuckles wrapped for sharing in the social media to warn their fellow healthcare professional to be, you know, very, very careful and be very cautious about this. So it shows you that, you know, what happened in 2002 has not truly been learned, you know, and the more worrying is the WHO now is seems to be part in part very, very closely tied to the machinery, as in the machinery allow them to speak and let the world know it's a big problem, then they can do so. Up to that point, they were still playing the same tune and without having an independent thinking and process. At least back in 2002, they were more proactive to look into the problem independently. And that is a worrying thing, you know. There's something I have to admit. I'm not a Donald Trump supporter. I hate every, you know, words that he said, but I think his criticism of WHO is probably correct, unfortunately.
So on the human side, can you give some reflection on what it's like for you?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So, you know, for me, I've gone through a bit of an emotional journey from concerning about my colleagues' lack of enthusiasm to engage the matter, to seeing people running completely ragged, but in a very skilled direction. That's another thing, you know, that I find rather than seeking the advice from colleagues in Hong Kong and Taiwan who've done very well. They will look at what is happening in Italy or now in UK, and you know, and ramp up their services, which is needed to be done. But and now it seems to me that they it may hopefully would dawn on them. So you ramped up all these critical care capabilities and capacities. Okay, we're not going to be as bad as the European, hopefully, and we can control it. What is your next phase? And now it's certainly turned into a bit of an afterthought. Well, the lessons could be learned, like how you started the conversation, what lessons could be learned and how to gain their wisdom, you know, in terms of the stricter, you know, screening before people entering a hospital and the PPE issues in terms of the processes. You know, because a lot of it is not buying in very expensive, you know, like a spacesuit like PPE. Actually, that is a very much of a misnomer because those devices can be very problematic because it's not just putting on, it's ticking off how likely to get contaminated. You know, it's not something that discussed widely, and it needs a lot of training. So, but same and the same token, we would not have enough face shields. You know, people would be washing the face shield for even discussion on face mask, you know, reuse and so on. And the health service are very good to be very upfront and saying we have proper protocol and policies. But if you, I dare say, if you go around a lot of hospitals, people would be still today washing their face shield and reusing them and feeling quite unhappy about the whole PPE issue. And you respond to it, you say we've got shipments. And I know that the shipment's not going to come that quickly because of the world situation, not just simply the Australian needs for them. So that been a quite a worrying situation. But having said that, you have to be very positive, you know, that we could control it so well. And let me highlight, you know, one example to you. People can go to the news. Northwest Health Service in Tasmania. It doesn't take much for one breach for it to spread to a lot of people in the hospital. If you not follow, or if you're not actually protecting the frontline health worker to do the job in terms of the PPE practices, and also, you know, let's be fair. Also, maybe people breaching their PPE policies or use or guidelines. So these are all very real, but even that, you know, our news, our media, our health professional forum has not really pushed that to the forefront of people's mind. And we seem to now let this, you know, success, you know, be the dominant news, which I think it should be. But I think the case in Northwest Health Service is a massive warning, you know, to show you it doesn't take much for it to flip.
Exactly. Well, all I can say is wonderful what you do, and with all the health workers, because the fear must be enormous when you're dealing with people who are very, very sick every day.
People coughing, sputtering, you do run through in your mind what you're dealing with, the potential risk. And I'm not that young, you know, that to know that I'm still okay, but I'm not that young, and to think that you would carry, you know, the potential risk back home as well, is a massive fear. But I've been very lucky. I've seen colleagues who've been very positive and very upfront in dealing with the matter, and the nursing staff, you know, we've been very good at supporting each other. I think that has been very positive. Certainly, yeah, the first week or two to go into those isolation rooms. The other thing, lest go into a little bit of meaty, especially in emergency, you know, medicine, that we are having to do any procedure, what we call aerosol generating procedure, that will increase the risk significantly. So that means people who are now needing intubation to basically to be put to sleep, to have a machine breathe for them, you put an airway breathing tube, right? But thank God, you know, we're certainly not in the UK and Italian situation, and I have a lot of UK contacts and got friends who work just outside London, and their pressure enormous, you know, the devs, you know, the stresses, you know, the death of, you know, as in patients, and the stresses of dealing with very sick people, and intensive care being ramped up and using every single possible beds that can facilitate ventilation for intensive care or for critical care for this type of patient. And the other key thing is also everybody over there would know somebody, whether medical or not, who are sick. And some are very unwell. Talking to a friend who have a close friend who is intubated for 2 weeks, another clinician, and intensive care. But that's just a bad example, you know, but a lot more examples of people just being unwell, staying at home. And you can see we're not in that predicament, and we should focusing on how to do our maintenance well. I mean, it's very hard to simply rely on a massive lockdown, you know, continuously, because, you know, I'm not an economic expert, but you can see what the detriment, you know, to the economy, and people will lose livelihood. There'll be a lot of social problems as well. So the next phase is how we can learn, you know, from places like Korea and Taiwan to an extent. They Hong Kong's different. Hong Kong just gone on to do a massive lockdown, and they're still not back to school yet. But Taiwan certainly back in, you know, in school, and Korea again, they're much less, you know, the lockdown situation, and how they can, you know, maintain a normal social and economic activities for the population, as well as controlling, you know, the spread of the virus. That's what we need to learn, you know?
Yes, like I said, so many learnings from this. I guess one of the biggest things is that it really makes evident the inequities in our society as well. Thank you so much for doing this, Ken. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. It's been very nice to have the opportunity to speak to you.